You're listening to The Atomic Geeks, a podcast covering movies, TV, comic books, video games, and everything in between. So geeky.
Greetings, gentle listener, and welcome back to The Atomic Geeks podcast. My name is Little Michael Horner, and I am sitting in a corner drinking me a 10-point India Pale Ale from Lake of Bays Brewery. Let's see what other fairy tale characters are joining me.
Well, hello, Michael and everyone else. I just burned myself jumping over a candle to get into my basement in London. I'm holding a Coors Light in my hand. It's leftover beer, and I can't really tell without the label on it if it was Coors Light or Bud Light or some other light beer. It's just beer.
All right, and with that kind of weird stumbly intro, it's me, Mike Downs. I'm in a fairy tale basement in a land far, far away. And in this place, for some reason, I still got to work. I got to brew fucking beer. And I'm drinking some of that beer I brewed. It's called DRI. It's dry.
Oh, hello, Internet. Hickory Dickory Doc. I'm in a big shoe doing a podcast. Up the hill, down the hill, friggin' hickory dickory dock. And I'm drinking a Tecate Cerveza. Apparently it's a beer from Mexico, but it's got a cool eagle with a T on it. And I'm drinking that and talking about Ferris stories.
Well, if you can't tell from our intros, we have devoted this entire episode tonight to the movie The Ice Pirates.
Downs, what does DRI stand for?
Like, does it stand for anything? Oh. No, but so it's like the, I'm glad you asked. I've been waiting for someone. It's 2 weeks I've mentioned this beer now. It's a dry clone, but I was like, you know, I'm thinking of Dr. Dre's song, still DRE. And I'm like, well, maybe I'll make my beer DRI. It's the DRI. So that's where I come up with that.
Oh, so it's just a really faggy way to spell dry.
Fuck you. It's not. It's cool. Dr. Dre.
It's a sophisticated way because I imagine there's some exante goo on that eye.
You know what? There's umlauts, exactly. There's two umlauts over one eye.
Well, that's much better. Motley Crue's nodding their head right now. Love it.
They're going. Two umlauts? I was going to say seven umlauts.
That's unprecedented seven. Come on. They won't give you seven.
One bigger than
that. Yeah, actually, if you try to put seven on your computer, it will actually explode.
The umlauts are also made out of bones in the image as well. I love how much marketing foresight you put into these beers that you're never going to sell.
Well, you know what's funny? I'll tell you a story. So last week on the Kijiji, this guy had this ad up for some tap handles. And my brewing club was making fun of them because one's like a Schlitz and one was a Miller Genuine High Life. I'm like, I'm going to buy those because I brew so much beer. I can't keep naming it because I do so many different beers now. So I'm just going to put the taps on and go, it's Schlitz or Miller High Life. Take your pick. And those won't be the beers, but I can't keep coming up with names. I'm creatively tapped.
So many bottles in his basement, just working so hard, hair matted to his head, sweating. God, time to make the beer, waking up at 3 a.m. every day.
Joke. But I have a guy who's having a birthday party, 40th birthday party. I'm brewing beer for him. And right after that, I've got a friend who wants me to brew their wine for them. So now I do a batch for me, a batch for someone else. And literally, I can't keep beer bottles and kegs and wine bottles around fast enough because I'm brewing it
this
so
is
much.
This sounds like the start of a brewery right here.
Downs is starting the DCBO for crying out loud in his friggin' basement.
DCBO?
For those
the Downs Liquor Control Board or whatever, liquor, anyway, something like that.
For those keeping track, Downs has created names for three beers.
I have.
And he's creatively tapped. Thanks for joining the podcast.
I call this one
B3D, Dirty Blonde, the DRI.
I think that's it.
You might be right.
And the next one's going to be called
Beer. You can maybe move on to the E in the alphabet now after that one.
You know what it is that the beer just, because I brew kegs, it goes so fast. You know what I mean? Like, literally, next week by the time on this podcast, I'll be drinking a new beer. You know what I mean? And 2 weeks after that, it'll be a new beer. So even though I don't mention it, I've only named like three. I've probably brewed 12 different types of beer in the last 2 to 3 months.
You know what would be a good thing to do is you should get yourself a baby name book and just name each beer keg after a child's name.
They are like babies.
I'm drinking Harry this week.
Oh, jeez. Moira tastes good.
Just finished off Igor last night.
Oh, yeah, that Moira. That was awesome.
I can just picture Downs right now working away with a straw in his mouth, drinking one keg, making another one.
I must finish Edward. Must finish Edward.
I'm not calling any beer fucking Edward. I'm just...
And then it's on to Bethany.
All right. Well, let's move on from lying on top of Bethany and move into some of that geek news.
Geek news.
All right. Who has some for us tonight?
I have some geek news. So in a follow-up to last week's geek news story, Bruce Willis has said G.I. Joe Retaliation is the best movie he's ever worked on.
Oh, here goes Bruce again.
Actually, it is G.I. Joe Retaliation news I have. If you remember last week, we talked about this this pushback that the makers of the movie have done. Apparently now it's come out why this movie was pushed back, and I'm going to share it with you. Apparently, most of the as I said, this was probably reactions to test screenings. This is apparently what this is about. And they say that the only positive reaction during the whole movie was between The Rock's character, Roadblock, and this Channing Tatum kid who plays Duke. But the problem is they killed Duke off like in the first act. So now apparently they're going back and rewriting the story so that Duke doesn't die in the beginning and he comes back in the end, all because the only fucking thing that was positively remarked on during test screenings of this movie was about their two relationships. So I thought that was pretty fucking interesting based off of what we said last week.
Well, on top of that as well, Channing Tatum had a pretty big year. I mean, at the end of 2011 and the beginning of 2012, he's kind of cemented himself as A-list. I mean, 21 Jump Street was bigger than I think a lot of people expected. That stupid fucking The Vow was really big. So I think the studio's also probably going, Christ, why did we make a movie with Channing Tatum and kill him in the first 15 minutes? But that said, I think that's an inspired idea, what they were trying to do there, because the first film was so creatively unsuccessful that they were saying, let's, how about we kill all the other Joes and move forward? But I guess this has kind of bit them in the ass because people want their Tatum.
Was Tatum in the first one? I haven't seen the first G.I. Joe.
He was.
I didn't know.
Surprised at all there.
Duke, you know, he's not that big of a character, actually. He's just like the leader, not really important.
I heard the movie was shit, so I didn't watch it.
Oh, wait, a movie being shit is stopping you from seeing something?
Yeah.
All you watch is fucking shit.
What are you talking about?
Every one of your movies is one of your wife's recommendations, for Christ's sakes.
Yes.
Hey, I did see Channing Tatum recently in Dear John. Passionate love story.
I heard that, speaking of The Vow, I heard that is the worst movie ever made.
I will then solemnly make a vow that I will never see that movie.
Now I won't see it, because I was going to, but now I won't see it.
Well, I definitely won't see if it's shit.
I definitely wasn't going to see it.
Christian, if it was a good romantic movie, I'd watch it. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. You know, it's actually quite interesting if you think about the people who saw that screening are going to see a vastly different movie in a year from now. And being a guy who's done a lot of what user research or usability studies, where basically when I've built games and software, we go out and we test them with people and then we change them based off people's feedback. I actually think this is, as you said, DJ, kind of inspired. I think this is the film studio going, you know what? Maybe we should listen to these fucking people we put the movie in front of. They didn't like it, so maybe we want to address that. So I don't know if the movie's going to be any better, but it's an interesting turnaround for sure for a huge studio to do this.
Or maybe the studio has learned that they could save some money by not having so many fucking teenage girls in the test audience.
Yeah. Well, do you know what the thing is this is a pretty big change, though, right? Like, if you're saying the story was based on, I mean, from all the trailers that we were able to see, because they were expecting this movie to drop, a month out before they pulled the plug on it. Everything was about the Joes get sneaked attack. Every one of them gets wiped out with the exception of a small little group of them led by The Rock. And the story goes from there. They go and get Bruce Willis, the original Joe. Now, if you're not going to have Duke die, that to me seems like a significant change to a movie. Like, they're gonna have to refilm a lot of shit to get him back in the story, right?
I read that they're actually just going to superimpose him on the whole movie, just the whole time. in the background.
Yeah, put him in front of a green screen with the actual footage playing in the background of him running along.
And every when they're like concocting their missions, he's just there nodding.
Yeah. So like, they might just use a cardboard cutout to save money.
Just so like, let's go, and all of a sudden it just cuts to a scene completely shot like in someone's basement of Channing Tatum just go, yeah, let's go.
Let's run like they said. Shows him running down the street, no one around him.
Superimposing him over in front of explosions everywhere.
I thought you already said that, actually.
Yeah. Explosions.
I'll say it again. It was pretty funny.
Well, talking about pretty funny, let's move into tonight's topic. If you could tell, if you remember back about 5 minutes ago, you can rewind this podcast and listen to our intros again. We talked a little bit about fairy tales, because it seems to be that fairy tales are the new hot trend in Hollywood, with the just released Snow White and the Huntsman, and the forthcoming, a few things are on deck as well, including Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, and the delayed, until 2013, Jack the Giant Killer. What this new trend seems to be is taking some of those familiar fairy tales, beloved fairy tales, and adjusting them to make them into gigantic blockbuster action super movies. So, I have asked the Atomic Geeks, this seems to be easy if Hollywood's doing this, let's see if we could do a blockbuster up some more fairy tales and potentially also mine some nursery rhymes, because those aren't so bad either. Now, some of the caveats are this as we go into it. The important key is we have to remain somewhat faithful to the original fairy tale. We can't do Little Boy Blue and call him a intergalactic bounty hunter, all right? It has to stay somewhat in the vein of the original story, as in the way that the forthcoming Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunters, what they've done there is they've reimagined that Hansel and Gretel are now older and, thanks to their experience as kids, are now hunting some terrible witches. It's a reinvention, but it's, as you understand what I mean, it's still in line with those characters. The other important rule here as well is we are not making animated movies. This is not Pixar or cartoon, guys. This is live action. So regardless of who your protagonists are in your fairy tale or nursery rhyme, this shit is live action, and we will find a way. So what I tasked us as we kind of dive into blockbuster in the fairy tales is I'm going to throw out a very famous fairy tale that all of us together are going to kind of chew on to see how could we spin this into blockbuster movie magic. And that first fairy tale is The Goose That Laid the Golden Eggs. It's a pretty familiar one. I think we all probably heard this in elementary school or whatnot. But pretty much a couple farmers found themselves a goose that laid some golden eggs. that's pretty much it. But in the original story, as it turns out, the farmers thought that this thing's laying eggs. Maybe inside of it, it has it's actually filled with gold. So they kill the goose and realize, nope, it's a normal goose. And now it's basically a metaphor for the greed is if they just would have continued to let the goose lay golden eggs and not kill it, they would have been rich as opposed to trying to be more rich. So let's start with the fellas here. How can we turn this thing into a Hollywood potential movie franchise? So Downs, what are you thinking? Do you think that this is a good vehicle for a movie, The Goose That Laid the Golden Eggs?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I thought in terms of mine, I stuck very close to the original story, but this one I thought, you could really do something quite different because all you have to have really is a goose that fucking lays golden eggs. I saw, the story isn't that.
They're everywhere.
Well, the rest of the fairy tale is not that important to the story. So I thought this is either a Quentin Tarantino or a Guy Ritchie film, because to me, like, especially a Guy Ritchie, I think, it would be about the passing of the goose. You know what I mean? Like, the goose is here. No, the goose is there. Oh, look, the goose is over there now. Like, kind of like a caper movie. So that's what I was thinking when I heard of this one.
Wow, that's kind of awesome, because I didn't even think of it in the sense of you're seeing this as almost slightly contemporary in the sense of it's happening, quote unquote, in the real worldy idea of like the 80s, 90s, 70s, 2000s sort of thing?
Yeah, yeah. Like this would totally be probably early 2000s, I think. But, you know, it's somehow, you know, somebody has got this goose that lays a golden egg, and it rumors get out. And so it's like basically this criminal, underbelly are trying to get this, you know, I imagined it as like this crime superlord has this goose that's a golden egg, and that's how he's gotten to power. And so you would have this rogues gallery of people trying to then steal the goose that lays the golden egg.
Oh, I thought yeah. When you're saying like the word got out, it'd be like Road Race where everyone's trying to win the goose at the end of the thing, like a giant cannonball run.
Road Race.
That's what I wrote down in my notes, Medieval Cannonball Run, but I don't think that works, even though that's a fucking brilliant idea. Why doesn't someone remake that movie for crying out loud? George Clooney, I'm looking at you. I saw this more as kind of like a medieval, actually, and along the same vein of Downs' idea, I thought this more of along the lines of a medieval Midnight Run, kind of somewhat of a comedy, but like these two stupid farmers let the word out about this golden egg, and they're just basically getting chased until they have to get to their eventual destination where they'll be safe, apparently, I guess, or something. Who knows?
Oh. Yeah. See, Andy, what about you? Where are you leaning towards?
I went really opposite of these guys. Like, first of all, this is not much of a – this is more like I would say closer to like a nursery rhyme or whatever. It's very short. It's very simple. It gets the moral point across, and that's about it. Like, there's not much to it. It would be a very boring movie if you tried to just stick to the story. 2 hours, you'd probably have to lay eggs for an hour and 55 minutes, and then they'd kill it. But what I thought is maybe you go for that, the root of it, like that metaphor, which is basically like, you know, when you have something that pays you a small amount daily, but you lose it when you try to push it to get more, where you... You know, you try and your greed takes over, like you were saying before. But I thought maybe a comedy, kind of not unlike like a Liar Liar type of thing, where the guy's always trying to get more out of the little things that he has, and he keeps losing like his, you know, his girlfriend, his house, and his kid, and like whatever it is, because he's always trying to get too much out of things to kind of get that moral point across.
So you're saying that there actually is no goose in your thing laying golden eggs. This is just the
right.
title.
Unfortunately, that does break a little bit away from what you're saying. You could, I guess, have a goose that lays a golden egg or a fake one or something like that in the story. But my point was is to take it to sort of the comedy side, because I thought you could see the tragedy slash comedy in that whole thing where eventually the guy could learn his lesson but might be too late.
There's got to be a goose. There has to be a physical goose.
Yeah, but sure, he could have a mechanical goose that lays a golden egg.
And every time this goose lays an egg, it makes this horrible sound that indicates where...
Just like that. You know, I think you're right, Andrew. It's a very simple little story, but it's a great MacGuffin. I mean, it's a goose that's giving out treasure, basically, to whoever possesses it. There's a story right there. I like both spectrums in the sense of Downs, how that would work with a slight fantasy bent, that a Guy Ritchie gets a hold of this thing. You get fucking 20 different segments of weird gangster people all vying for it and screwing each other over. There's not a bad little movie. That I think that's inspired Downs. I was thinking more along the lines of what Christian was thinking, because I think you set this in medieval times, sort of air quotey, Lord of the Rings fantasy world, and, people across a kingdom hear that a couple lowly farmers have this, and everyone comes gunning for it, and then it becomes, who do they side with? Who can they trust? Et cetera, et cetera. Big battles happen as a result because everybody's after the damn goose. That can lay some golden eggs. I think this one, I think, is sort of a lob ball or a lob egg, because there's a story there already. I mean, having something that lays gold suggests people want it and are going to kill to try to get it.
But you're also losing, I mean, you're losing the point of the story. The point is that moral thing where the people kill it or try to get more out of it and then lose out in the end, where... You know, if you can make a chase movie out of it if you want, but then it's no longer really that story, other than the fact that you have a goose that lays a golden egg in.
Well, the way
that's not true. But you can have whoever gets to, like, you know, in the end thinks they have it, maybe they have the wrong goose. I mean, meanwhile, the goose is off living on a farm somewhere, and no one ever knows that that goose lays a goose. You know what I mean? Like, you could totally end it the same way.
No, the goose has to be dead at the end. That's how it has to happen. Like,
no, it doesn't. You have to learn the lesson of not being greedy. The goose doesn't have to die to learn that lesson.
I think we can probably
like the characters
the
give it to like a friggin' orphanage or something, or Robin Hood or some shit like that.
You now know,
like,
you just did Robin Hood.
The choice between you have to make the choice between giving it to like the wealthy king who's they will give them reward them for it, or to those friggin' homeless kids with the friggin' charcoal.
What I think happens is they think they're doing something clever, like they're screwing somebody out of it, and they screw themselves. That's the lesson, right?
Exactly. That's what I think, Downs.
All I'm saying is you need to have that in there, because that's the whole point to
but
it.
But I think that what either stories that we've kind of described, that's very easy to input that. It's like, as the guys are saying, is if the farmers, or in Downs's case, the original handler of it just kind of kept it to themselves without maybe broadcasting this, they would have saved themselves a whole lot of trouble, right? Like, that's sort of still that moral bent and applies to that goose, you know, the story that was kind of implied in that fairy tale. Yeah,
that's just stupidity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no, it's like there is the
telling
greed.
People that you, I've got this cash cow. Yay! But I mean, obviously, people would find out about it through. They have to cash in those eggs somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
but people hate movies about stupid characters, right? For crying out loud!
Or people movies about stupid characters.
I know he was.
What are you talking about? Dumb and Dumber.
As I said, people like them. You said people hate them.
He was.
Oh, I thought you said people hate.
No,
them.
I thought Christian was being sarcastic.
My point was is. Mine was a comedy that was – I was trying to play on that more. I like Downs's idea for sure. I think it's really cool. I'm just saying I had a comedy.
I think all of these – it's interesting right out of the gates here how open to interpretation that these fairy tales can take us. So before we move on into diving into some other ones, we're going to do a quick pitch for what you think would be – the better option to make into a movie. So, Mike Downs, what do you think? The Boy Who Cried Wolf or The Ugly Duckling?
Boy Who Cried Wolf or The Ugly Duckling? You know, I gotta think probably Ugly Duckling, because Ugly Duckling, that's been done a few times. Disney's done that idea. I think that's probably your pretty relatable story. I'd say Ugly Duckling.
Fellas, chime in. What do you think? Is he right?
I agree. I mean, the boy who cried wolf, who cares about that boy? The boy's an asshole from beginning for crying out loud. So he finally learns his fucking lesson when somebody gets killed or something. Forget it. I wouldn't want to watch a movie about that.
I mean, you could definitely put that into a movie, but maybe not make a movie based around it. But, yeah, I mean, they've done it so many times with the nerd who's secretly hot when they take off their glasses. There's your ugly duckling. You know, they go through that. They've done that movie several times. I think that would probably work.
I'm going to be a minority here. I'd pick The Boy Who Cried Wolf over The Ugly Duckling. I mean, I think if you try to stay closer to these stories, I think that Boy Who Cried Wolf, I could see how that could turn into more of a horror movie sort of bent, right? That the kid does this, and then when it actually, you know, he's lying and blah, 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 to maybe kind of for his own selfish means, and then when it's really necessary, no one believes him, and then a wolf comes in and slaughters half the village. The Ugly Duckling, in my brain, I thought of this as, like, the only way you could kind of do this is, like, one of those goddamn live-action Disney animal movies, like Homeward Bound or fucking White Fang.
Yeah, but you'd have to stretch your imagination a little bit and say this ugly duckling is a chick or a person. You know what I mean? Like, with all these, we're making these, other than that goose that lays a golden egg, you're kind of, I think you would have to put people in these live action things instead of doing something like Babe.
But that's not, but no, I think, but keep in mind though, right? Like Cinderella, I mean, what is it? Jack the Giant Killer, Jack and the Beanstalk. They didn't turn that into like a big business thing, right? Like, they still kept the guy that he plants seeds and it grows the...
Yeah, but those are humans.
Yeah,
you're not going to like
there,
my
there's
right?
But there's humans in the goose that laid the golden eggs, right? Like,
well, I understand that. And that one, I said, we keep that and that works. But when you What was the one? You had the boy who cried wolf and then the ugly duckling. Like, fuck, nobody wants to watch a movie about a duck.
Well, it's not about a fucking duck.
All of us said, I think the three of us, anyways, went the way of making that into a human.
Yeah, that's what we did. DJ was going right for the duck.
I'm not going for that.
Yeah, no, but I kind of agree that the more interesting story that Hollywood hasn't told is The Boy Who Cried Wolf. You know what I mean?
You're right.
In terms of what is more marketable, and Hollywood has proven this because they've done it multiple times, is, you know, they've done the Ugly Duckling story a few times.
Yeah, if I'm a tag studio, I am a tag studio executive for crying out loud, and these are the two things that you're asking me to invest money into to choose from, I'm going with the Ugly Duckling.
This is not the tag studio. I'm saying, what do you want to think would make a better goddamn movie at the end of the day?
Well, that's just
I also think the Ugly Duckling would be better.
Okay, there you go.
Would be more commercially successful.
Yeah, but DJ, you do make a good point, because you could have The Boy Who Cried Wolf then have to fight these wolves and become a wolf killer.
Yes, like that's you could
turn into something that would, you know, although it would kill half the village, then he's like, man, I got a revenge on these wolves.
Yes,
killing my parents.
He learns his lesson. See, here we go.
Then a wolf man superhero.
Well, you know what? This sounds like a prequel to the movie Brothers of the Wolf.
Yes, it's a whole trilogy in the goddamn making. If you guys would just get off the goddamn Ugly Ducklings train here.
And if you could throw in a magic ugly duck, it's a fucking winner.
Maybe if you thought about that instead of trying to make a goddamn Katherine Heigl movie for fuck. All right.
You were just hoping for boobs.
Oh, of course you were. So talking about boobs, let's move on to one of the Atomic Geeks having, I've challenged each of them individually here to, blockbuster, a couple nursery rhymes or fairy tales. So, Christian, you were tasked with how do we make a blockbuster movie out of Humpty Dumpty?
Yes, Humpty Dumpty, that long spanning nursery rhyme with so much detail and freaking mythos behind
it. So glad I didn't get that one.
Untapped resource.
Oh my God. Worlds can be created from the very few, you know, opening verses of that long, long poem. Humpty Dumpty. At first I saw that, said, you got to be fucking kidding me. I mean, what the hell am I going to do with this? And I said, isn't this supposed to be about fairy tales? And I was told, no, nursery rhymes as well. So I said, okay, I accept your challenge. And I think I came up with something fairly decent. When this movie does come out, I don't think it should be called Humpty Dumpty. I think it should just be called The Dumpty or Dumpty.
I hate it.
I think that's fair. We don't know what your idea is yet.
That's crazy.
I'm
buying in. I'm totally digging where you're going. We'll keep going.
Well, Humpty Dumpty as a title, regardless of where you're going, that's a fucking tough sell job right there.
Hump Dump. Yeah. Just cut it short for today's crowd.
So the scenario for this movie is this. Essentially, it takes place in one of those kind of like pseudo-mythological worlds with friggin' guys with goatees and magic powers and friggin' dragons and all that kind of shit. And
keep talking.
That's the hero of my story is this king of this so-called land or community or whatever the hell you want to call it. And he's basically at this very moment has gone through this gigantic battle against some evil duke wizard or something like that, and has almost basically crushed all of his forces. He's worried about whether or not he'll be able to continue on fighting this battle until, like, his house wizard or what you want to call it tells him about this magical armor called the Dumpty. And essentially what happens is when the only caveat is that when you wear this
although
it increases everything, like all of everything is like better. It's like basically like taking like heroin, like 10,000 times over. You are like unstoppable, stronger than anything in the entire friggin' world.
You know what heroin does?
But you know what I'm saying? It's like heroin. Like, you feel very... No, I don't know what heroin... I'm sure I know what heroin does. That's why I don't do heroin. But anyway, so basically, whenever he puts on this armor, he can kick the living shit about out of anything. He can do anything. Everything he does is 100 times better. He's the life of the party. He's basically winning battles on his own, chopping wood like crazy, drinking beer all over the place. But the only problem is the longer he wears his armor, the weaker he gets. And he starts basically being very selfish about wearing this armor until the point comes where this evil Duke is rallying his forces again. And the king kind of makes a last-ditch effort to not use the armor, but just fight with his own friggin' men and inspire them to go on and do it by themselves, but then realizes at the end that he has to wear the armor, and by doing so, he's taking his own life and basically, you know, paying the price for his, you know, ill-gotten friggin' behavior.
He's sacrificing himself in the end.
Yes, essentially. And there's a wife in there, too, that he's ignored, or a love story of some kind. So that makes it even more touchy-feely at the end when he puts that friggin' dumpty armor on again and says goodbye.
So, really?
And then kicks the living shit out of the guy.
Really awesome. That actually turned out to be really awesome, although I was laughing because you're so general through the whole thing. A magic guy or whatever with a goatee, who knows, whatever.
Chopping wood. Chopping wood. He's chopping wood.
Yeah, he can chop wood and give the fawns thumbs up better than anyone.
But if obviously the most important thing is that the final battle where he basically is facing off is against this evil Duke, right, who's also somehow got magical powers to combat the dumpty armor, has to basically face off on a wall, and where he will eventually win. But
so does he die when he takes the armor off?
No, I see him dying with the armor on, essentially crumbling as he falls backwards, you know, or something like that.
You know what, Christian? That is way fucking better than I thought you were going to count when I hit you. Because you know what? And the one thing, when I threw this out, I know everyone was like, fuck, I'm glad I didn't get Humpty Dumpty, was forget all the little story books that you read as a kid. But if you just read Humpty Dumpty, nowhere in that shit does it say this thing is an egg. Nowhere. The artist that interpreted that drew him as a goddamn fucking egg. So that was the one thing I thought. I said, okay, if someone kind of goes and still thinks of what the story is saying, but doesn't take it literally where it has to be a giant egg man.
Yeah.
There could be something here. And I think you fleshed that out into something that's pretty goddamn good.
That it actually blew my mind a little bit. The only thing I will say, and you're limited by the, source material here, is that calling that armor Dumpty is the worst thing I've ever heard. But what do you do? Like,
what
I guess you could still use the source material, but do you have to have Dumpty in the title? Like, does it have to say Humpty or Dumpty anywhere?
Well, you know what? You could call it like it was Lord Dumpty or something like that was the guy that created that armor. But yes, because then if we just call it awesome armor, then it's not even about Humpty Dumpty. I think for the purpose of this and for the first draft of the script, yes, you have to keep Humpty and or Dumpty in the script. I think the Dumpty is as good as it can get. Maybe it'll be once we test screen it and they want more Channing Tatum in it, they'll probably change the name.
So it's called the Tatum.
Yeah, give me that HD armor now.
Downs, what did you think of Christian's spinning of the Humpty Dumpty mythos?
No, I liked it. I agree with everything you guys are saying. The whole idea of that, you know, this, we've all assumed that Humpty Dumpty's an egg when really that's an assumption that they, you know, or it's something we've been taught to think of because of the artist. I like this idea. I think you could totally do like, you know, the guy's name is Dumpty and the kids make fun of him or something, you know what I mean? It's like Humpty Dumpty, you know what I mean? Like that is how you could get around that, you know what I mean? So that's pretty fucking doable, I would think. I was actually quite blown away. This is pretty creative, way better than I did, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
All right, good work, Christian. Time for another quick pitch. All right, Downs. Oh, not Downs. I've already given one to Downs. Andrew Bloom.
Oh, hello.
Quick pitch.
Okay.
What would make a better live-action blockbuster? Cinderella or Sleeping Beauty?
Aren't they the same? I'm going to say Sleeping Beauty.
I agree. That's an excellent choice. Cinderella's been done too many fucking times.
Yeah, but the problem with fucking Sleeping Beauty is there's nothing going on. The bitch is sleeping the whole fucking film.
No, isn't there a witch in that thing that gives her the apple that causes her to sleep?
And then there's a prince that's trying to wake her up.
And doesn't she turn into a big dragon?
And medieval lingerie.
Yes. It's a porn, actually.
Yeah,
it's,
but if you're talking about lingerie, fucking Cinderella's more up your goddamn alley. There's three, there's four chicks going to a ball, man. Like, they're getting ready for that.
But the evil stepsisters are all always portrayed as not attractive as well.
No, but this is
not in our version. In the
open your mind.
They've got big boobs and they're like porn stars.
Yes, open your mind up. Like, these in our movie, these girls are skanks.
They're a bunch of butterfaces.
Well, that's much better. Thanks, Christian, for that. Their bodies are amazing, but their faces could melt the film they're shot on.
And don't forget, they're total fucking bitches.
They could turn milk with their very gaze.
Yeah. Huge triple F tits, too, as well.
So nobody even actually notices that have faces.
So, Downs, you're saying, though, you would go with Cinderella over Sleeping Beauty because you think Sleeping Beauty's story's limited.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. Now that you guys have been talking, there are some pretty cool things in there. And, I mean, fucking Cinderella's been done. So, you know,
Cinderella's such a chick flick.
It is. Yeah. Andrew, I totally agree. Cinderella, I mean, these are the battle of the Disney cartoons, right? Like, these are so entrenched in our mind's eye because of those cartoons. So you have to kind of think a little bit outside of the box. But that Cinderella story, there's no getting around that shit ain't really romantic. Whereas Sleeping Beauty, you can take that into a more Tolkien-esque sort of, make the story be more about the prince, right? Like, you could really make it, he could be the lead, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sleeping Beauty could have been asleep for right at the beginning of the film. Like, it doesn't even have to be with her. It could be a big giant contest of dudes trying to get to be the one to bang her.
Or the kingdom needs to be saved by, you know, the only living heir to a throne, and this prince and a group of his fucking warriors have to figure out a way to awaken the, you know, her blood. Like, there's a slant there that I think could be a lot better than Cinderella's all built around going to a goddamn fucking ball, right? Yeah. In glass slippers.
It's a party. That's it.
I like though Andrew the area though Andrew almost kind of talked about a bit more was sounded like he was going with like a Sleeping Beauty kumite where guys battle for
blood sport.
Wake her up.
It's like a blood sport. Yeah,
that's pretty goddamn good idea as well. But it sounded like Sleeping Beauty is the winner there. All right, so let's move on to another one of the fellas here who are going to give us how they're going to blockbuster a fairy tale, and I'm going to move over to the man sitting beside me. To the left, I think, Mike Downs, and he was given the task of Rapunzel.
Okay, so the story of Rapunzel, interestingly enough, Disney just did this with Tangled. So in case you don't know the story, and specifically, we all know about Rapunzel and Rapunzel letting down her hair. That's what we're all familiar with. But in case you forget, Rapunzel was locked in a tower. She was actually, the story starts with, like most fairy tales do, with a bargain. It's a couple, an older couple who want to have a child. They can't have a child. The woman sneaks into this witch's garden, or the man does, sneaks into this witch's garden to steal some fucking plant or something, gets caught, and the witch says, listen, I'll let you go, but I want your firstborn. So they give the Rapunzel to the witch. It turns out that Rapunzel, it's kind of lost a lot, but I don't even think Disney did it in their movie, but the idea was that Rapunzel's hair had some magical properties, and even in some instances, her tears were magical, and that's why the witch needed her and kept her in this faraway castle. Along comes this guy, he hears her singing, you know, next thing you know, climbs up the hair, and, you know, there's a couple different versions of what happens there. The interesting thing for me is I thought this is basically already done for me. That you don't need to do much to this story. I think you need to adult it up. I think we need to hire the director who did that, the Red Riding Hood gothic version a la Stephanie Meyer, like the Twilight thing. I think you infuse that type of look to Rapunzel. So you make the witch much more scarier. But really, at the end of the day, this story is about a girl and a guy trying to save this girl from the witch and get her out of the castle. I don't think that that really changes. I think you adultify this and make the witch much more scarier. Imagine, you know, what's her name? Kristen Stewart as Rapunzel, you know, and fucking Edward, what's his face? You know, like, I think that that stylized look and that story, I don't think you have to change the story that much. I think the story's pretty good, actually.
It would be funny if you did that. You remember how when Steve Martin did the movie Roxanne, like the Cyrano de Bergerac take on Roxanne, but you did that with this one, make it modern day, where she's kind of like a recluse locked up in that thing, kind of pull the comedy side of it. I don't really know what you would do, but while you were describing that, for some reason, I just thought of that movie with Steve Martin.
Yeah,
because I fell asleep.
If there's one thing I'm going to add to this movie, I think that you have to make the hair come alive. Make it alive like Medusa from
like talking? Alive, no, or like, just moving around a lot?
Like, you have to CGI it up. That it, like, you really have to play up almost its, to Downs's point, its magical.
Yeah. I'm assuming you guys didn't see Tangled then. Oh, did you? Like that. Like, kind of like how they did in that thing where she flies around on it and all that.
But she was using it as, like, a tool. It wasn't alive where she could, like, make it go into shapes or anything. Like
well, although, in my research, that Tangled is the most vibrant they've made the hair in kind of the history of Rapunzel. Like, she has the longest hair that's ever been told. It's like 40 feet or something like that, which they've never had it that big kind of before. But I agree. I think if you're giving the hair some supernatural components, I think, like the witch, you turn the dial up to 11 on the supernatural component of that hair. You know, like, it almost has a personality of its own. So then, you know, maybe that hair is kind of ratting her out to the witch or something. You know what I mean? And it's kind of working against her and the prince. I don't know.
You know what?
That's an interesting idea.
You're right, though. Downs. I think this story, Rapunzel, it has the ingredients there already. Like, you could do what Bloom is saying and do sort of a modern reinvention of it, but it's got kind of the DNA of like a pretty good fantasy film. You know, when you look at some of the original stories, that's what's so interesting about these fairy tales, nursery rhymes, whatever. When they were first written, there's so many versions, and then they've been watered down or changed already throughout time. Because some of these original versions is the prince wants to, you know, liberate her from this from captivity, and then right at the time when he's about to do it, Rapunzel in one of the versions of the story turns on him and says no, because she still is holding out faith because she has this weird kinship with the witch. And then the witch ends up cutting off the locks of Rapunzel's hair and lets Rapunzel free to go in the sort of a dark forest, puts the hair out for the prince to come up. He climbs up, realizes, wait, I've been duped. It's the witch. And then kills himself by jumping off the tower. Like, that's right. So it's
very, very Romeo and Juliet, right? Like,
yeah.
If you think of that story, that's you're referring to, like, the original Grimm versions, right? Like, these were darker. There's also another one where, you know, she's running through the forest, and they run into each other, but he doesn't recognize her because she's not singing, and she's got her hair all cut off, and they miss each other, right? Like, so that is classic, classic fucking storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, to your point, this really does have a very good basis of the story. That's why I didn't think you really want to fuck with this too much.
Yeah, and there's another version where she's a crackhead.
Yeah, that one too, yeah. it's called Tangled X, I think.
Christian's really good throwing out the drug references here tonight. This is
street punzel.
Street punzel.
Heroin, crack?
Crack punzel. Crack punzel. Crack punzel. No, but you're right. I think, to me, this is a logical one. Granted, Tangled, that animated film, was very popular, and that's what's on everyone's kind of recent memory. Like, I think you've got to almost give a little bit of distance and time away from that cartoon. This, to me, seems like the really most logical story for them to do next. Outside of us four guys talking about this, drinking beer on a podcast, this one, I think, there's a really germ, well, more than a germ, of a good idea here to a film, because you're right. Witches, captivity, prince trying to save her, some, you know, mystical, supernatural abilities. Come on, this shit writes itself. Give Sam Raimi or fucking Peter Jackson or somebody this goddamn idea, and you, or Guillermo del Toro, you could spin this into something kind of cool, I think. All right, another time for a quick pitch. Christian Nielsen.
Yo.
What would make a better movie? Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, or Starlight, Star Bright?
Jesus Christ. Is it just, you just feel like you're throwing all the shit my way for crying out loud? Holy God. Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. That's my son's hand washing song as he soaps up his hand after taking a big poop.
The tears are rolling down your face right now.
And Starlight, Star. Okay, well, I think Starlight, Star Bright is probably the one to go with, because there's a wish element to that movie.
Oh, I see. I was thinking the same thing as when Dicho said that.
And I like the movies about the wishes. I mean, you know how it always starts out pretty good. I mean, granted, the endings are pretty trite. You know, it's like, oh, in the end, you know, like, wishes aren't all that fucking good after all, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Actually, that would be good. It'd be good to do this, because maybe we can get this movie and someone actually does the wishes right, for crying out loud.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and does it properly. No,
bucks the trend and say, fuck, wishes are awesome. We should all get them, for crying out
yeah,
loud.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, when you said this, I imagine the beginning of the movie is the fairy tale, is the nursery rhyme, and then that's it. The rest of the movie has nothing to do with it after that. It's about whoever the person was and whatever wishes they wished, right? Like, I think you could make that pretty quickly into a film, as a matter of fact.
But using really educated use of their wishes to kick some shit, you know what I mean? Not just be like, I wish for a big goose that lays a golden egg, blah.
But I agree with you as well. I think the wishes aspect of that makes it a logical launching point for a film. But Downs, as you just said, like the reciting the Starlight, Star Bright, the first star I've seen, like using that as an opening, I'm surprised that we haven't heard the Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, how I Wonder What You Are, as almost in a trailer for a giant fucking sci-fi invasion film. That would almost be creepy a little bit to hear a little child saying that as like a ship kind of comes out of space and starts fucking launching itself at Earth.
Like, that would be very somebody's writing
awesome
that down
idea.
Right now.
Yeah, yes.
That is an awesome
idea. Well, you know what
it
reminds me of? It reminds me of the nursery rhyme from Nightmare on Elm Street, right? One,
yes.
Two, Freddy's coming for
yeah,
you.
Exactly.
Three, four, better lock the
all right,
door.
Stop, Screech Man.
But it's like it's true. That's a pretty. I think we've come across. We got two ideas, two or three good ideas now on this show. My God, let's move into our last great idea, because this is the one that I gave to Andrew Bloom. Andrew, how do we blockbuster the movie, or blockbuster into a movie, I should say, The Three Little Pigs?
All right. This is where the problem happens, because we were talking before about how you wanted to keep everything the same and how all this, and they have to be the same type of characters. I kind of went a different route with this. My three little pigs in this are not actual pigs. They're metaphorical pigs, okay? So what I was hoping to do is sort of convert this a little bit and take a different perspective out, because, you know, it's modern day. And we want to look at this story in a different light. So I thought we would do this from the wolf's perspective instead of from the pig's perspective. So the three little pigs are kind of these Wall Street or business fat cats, right? Like these people who are greedy pigs. And the wolf, I thought, could be like a thief. Now, obviously, it has to be sort of a lovable thief to have as a main character, because people wouldn't go for it if it was a real, truly bad person. So maybe these pigs have gone a little too far in the business world, done a few illegal things, and this wolf character would like to set them straight. So, you know, you have to have the same type of thing. So there are the three pigs, and the first pig is, you know, Mr. Straw, if you will, and, you know, the wolf will take care of Mr. Straw with ease, and, you know, goes on to the next one and with, you know, Mr. Sticks, whatever you want. And then wolf takes out those ones. And now he's got to deal with Brick, the main big bad in this movie. He's got the impenetrable fortress that he or she, wolf, needs to get through. Like, you could take it either two ways. You could either have Wolf as a cop or a thief. I thought I'd go the thief side of that one, and because it is Wolf, where he, instead of blowing the houses down, he's sort of blowing down their empires.
Mm. And so as you're talking, two things came to mind. First, I was thinking of the Fantastic Mr. Fox and those kind of three bad guys, right? Like, so I love what you did there. I think that's really brilliant. And all I couldn't help but thinking is of Harvey Keitel from yes. Pulp Fiction as the Wolf. And I'm like, I don't know. I love that idea if he's in this movie somehow.
that would be good. And you know, it's funny. I didn't think of it. And then as soon as I went, well, there you go. As soon as I came up and said, well, he called the Wolf, I thought that is fitting because Harvey Keitel's character Wolf is quite awesome.
I think he's got to be a con man, though, than a thief, because like, what? How much could he fucking steal before he brings their empire down?
Well, it could. I'm thinking more action like type thing. Like, here's the thing. Like, it depends on how you think of the house, right? Like, it's either literally he's going to blow up their house, or he's going to take care of their house. And you could go either way. You could have them as business street fat cats, and he's like a thief or quote bad guy, or they're mafia guys, you know, Mr. Sticks and all that stuff. And Wolf is this semi-rogue cop who is going to clean up the streets. But that's been done a lot.
I like that
that's
idea.
That's kind of been done a lot.
Yeah, like the cop idea is the obvious one, but it almost could be like he could be someone that was steamrolled by these three fat pigs, using air quotes. So he was someone that maybe got put out of business and goes on a rampage and takes them out in sort of a almost a in his eyes a Robin Hood sort of concept, stealing from the rich, giving to the poor, but also he's also going out for revenge sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or maybe in a Norm MacDonald kind of dirty work kind of revenge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like really sticking it right to him. Like you're like you watch it and you go, oh, God, I'm glad.
I think also you want to stick with the whole thing where, you know, maybe his card sign or his signature thing or his email that he sends them literally tongue in cheek, because the Wolf last name would be, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in, you know, like kind of as his calling card after he's done, or a warning, that type of thing where you use it so you're still holding on to the fairy tale.
Yeah, that Andrew, that's pretty good. I mean, you had a tough challenge as well. Like my brain, in a way, when I first handed this out to you, I thought, could you get around the pigs idea and almost treat them like hobbits, right? Like treat them like like not literally put people in pig outfits,
no,
but almost
CGI. They, are you saying like CGI?
No, not CGI, but treat no, not even just pigs, but like use them as like I'm trying to think, like what were those fucking little guys that were in the junk area on Cloud? Oh. No, the Cloud City fucking guys that were fixing little guys that tore apart or tried to put back together C-3PO and worked in the fucking the
ones with the pig faces.
Yeah, like something like that. Like I thought maybe that's how my brain was like, okay, do you keep it in a fantasy world, but you don't make them literal pigs, but maybe they are Hobbit-y type characters. But I think what you have stumbled upon is actually a better interpretation of it, but it's still very loyal to that story and concept, right?
Yeah, and that was my fear, was getting away from, like, because when you said pigs, it's funny because Humpty Dumpty, I thought the same thing. I'm like, how is Christian going to deal with that? It was awesome. And I didn't realize, like, that all our lives we thought it was an egg, but never really said that. And this one, pigs, I'm like, it's quite literally pigs. Like, they are pigs. You have to do something to get around that.
Well, no, it's, I think that really works. I think it's pretty, and I think it's a, there's a lot of cool ideas that you could go with it, but I think as the taking down three fat cats, if you will, or fat pigs, if in a certain respect, is a smart idea. And as long as we don't turn it into a cop movie and we keep it as either like a sort of a rogue vigilante or a revenge tale, that could be really, really cool. I gotta hand it to my three fellow geeks here for their creativity that they've stepped up here. And I think we've come up with a lot of cool goddamn ideas for some tough nursery rhymes and fairy tales. Hopefully a couple of these ideas, Mr. Spielberg, Mr. Jackson, and Mr. Cameron while you listen to our show, that you will think that these will be great, and we will discuss our optioning and contract dollars in the future. So before we settle up here, let's move on to our Atomic Picks.
Atomic Picks.
Mike Downs.
Okay, my Atomic Pick is for a website, and specifically an article I read on this website. But the website's Geek Tyrant. We've mentioned these guys a few times. They have a lot of great articles. And they actually have an article up right now about how Inglourious Basterds fits into the Tarantino film universe. And what's really cool is, you know, guys with way more time on their hands than I have really spent time looking into all of Quentin Tarantino's films. And one of the things that's very cool is that Donnie Donowitz, the bear Jew from Inglourious Basterds, is actually the father of movie producer Lee Donowitz from True Romance. So, you know, this article is just very cool. Yeah, it's very cool. So it's the amount of thought that goes into Quentin Tarantino movies. The other thing is that he actually has two universes. Certain of his films exist in one universe, like Inglourious Basterds and Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. And then his other universe is for his movies that are movies that would be seen in that universe. So Kill Bill is actually ultra-violent because there's actually these geeks on the internet say that, you know, Quentin Tarantino's universe is a different universe because the Americans won the World War II by killing Hitler and all of his cronies in a movie theater and very violently. So therefore, this world is very desensitized to violence. So therefore, the movies that exist in this universe have to be more violent. That's how you get a movie like Kill Bill. Very, very interesting stuff. It actually then links into another article that talks about all the different characters and how, as a matter of fact, Winston Wolfe is considered a magical character in the Quentin Tarantino universe in that he can cross Tarantino universes. Really interesting stuff. It actually goes to show if you're a huge Quentin Tarantino fan like I am, it's actually really cool to see some of these things you might not have known about. So I would definitely go to Geek Tyrant if you have the time and check out their article that talks about how Inglourious Basterds fits into the Tarantino film universe. Interesting stuff.
That is really goddamn cool. I think I'm going to have to go check that out. And I, for one, cannot wait until Django Unchained comes out at Christmas, because apparently the trailer is coming out real soon. So I'm going to jump in here with my quick Atomic Picks. I've got two. First of all, I was sent a comic book from a couple guys, and that is writer Brian J. Apodaca. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. And artist B. Paul Jordan. These guys were nice enough. They found me on found the Atomic Geeks on Twitter, and they sent me their comic book Zombie Outlaw, and I've had a chance to read it. Pretty much what this story is, I've read the first issue. It shows two basically timelines where we're seeing back in Irvine in 1872, where a cowboy basically runs into some zombies, and then meanwhile in present day, a couple students at university are researching about the past, and then both of these stories start to intersect. I appreciate the enthusiasm by these fellows. It's very self-published, this comic. That is clearly. You know, I gotta say, not really my cup of tea. The artwork is extremely cartoony, and it's not something that I generally read. It's a little bit unpolished, the story. But I do, I mean, I love that guys are getting out there and putting together their own comic books and giving it a go. So I'm glad that you guys sent it to me. I can't see myself reading something like this again. It's just a little not up my alley in terms of content and definitely not in terms of the artwork. But if you are interested in checking this out, you can go to www.zombieoutlaw.com. And my other Atomic Pick is for a forthcoming TV show that's going to be on IFC. And this is called Comedy Bang Bang. Yes, if you're familiar with that, there's an actual podcast that does this. And this is by Scott Aukerman. The first episode of Comedy Bang Bang, which debuts on IFC on June 8th. So by the time this episode drops, you'll probably be able to see it pretty soon. But the first episode is on funnierdie.com. This is hilarious. And I'm actually looking through the internet right at Christian Nielsen now because he needs to watch this. The premise of this is pretty much Scott Aukerman is hosting a talk show. But this is all done sort of scripted, and it involves sketch comedy, and it goes way out there. In the first episode, they have Amy Poehler on it. They have a couple other comedians show up on it. It reminds me incredibly like Mr. Show. It is probably one of the funniest things I've seen in a long, long time. If you guys are into Mr. Show or just miss sort of very bizarre, eccentric sketch comedy, but it's built around also kind of like a talk show, check out Comedy Bang Bang on IFC or find it on funnierdie.com. Andrew Bloom.
Oh, hello there. I have a book, actually, that was picked up for me while my fiance was in New York City. At the Metropolitan Museum of Art. This is a DC Superheroes Ultimate Pop-Up Book. You can get it, I think, on Amazon, and I believe Christian has it already, but this thing is amazing. I'm going to try and post a few more pictures. I put one up. Just the amount of detail that goes into this and the massive size of these very intricate pop-ups. It kind of talks about different characters, and the big ones, Superman and Wonder Woman, Batman, they all have it. But then on the pages, they have little tiny pop-up pages and flip-through pages. It is something that it's kind of one of those things that you would love to show your kids, or Christian would love to show his kids, but you'd be too afraid that they would rip it to shit. Definitely check it out. You probably can on Amazon, DC Superheroes Ultimate Pop-Up Book.
And Christian Nielsen.
I do have that book, and my boy is not allowed to look at it unless supervision is involved. It's a crazy-ass friggin' pop-up book, I'll tell you that. Two Atomic Picks from me this week. First Atomic Pick is a brand-new show that apparently it did premiere on Showcase a few days ago. Canadian-produced sci-fi show called Continuum, and if you guess it's about time travel, well, you would be right for crying out loud. And essentially the story is this, a young lady who is basically a police officer in the year 2077 is sent back in time with seven terrorists to our present-day shenanigans, and all with her own future technology and shit like that, and basically tries to obviously find a way to get back to her original time and also take down these seven terrorists who plan to kill tens of thousands of people and get down to business right away. Not a bad little TV show. The special effects are pretty cool, too. I like the whole idea of it. I've set my PVR to record the entire season of this. I think it's only going to be about 10 episodes, from what I understand. But it's pretty good. I mean, now that summer's coming and there's not a lot of new shit coming out, you might want to check out Continuum. And speaking of shows that are now wrapping up, I'm surprised we haven't talked about the show a lot more, but that season finale of Grimm, for crying out loud, has anybody watched the show? I think you should watch the show if you haven't been, because that season finale was a freaking kick in the head, and it makes me want that new season to come sooner than later. Motherfucker. Anyway, those are my atomic picks.
Okay, let me jump in. I have to jump in because somehow I heard of this Continuum show before. I don't know where, but my man Todd Anstey actually just sent me an email before I got on this podcast saying how great this show is. I'd already heard it was good, and now you're saying it's good, Christian. I think this might be a time to jump on a new show. This thing sounds like it could be very fucking cool.
It sounds to me like she shouldn't have taken those terrorists back into the past with her. Would have solved her problem right away.
Well, I generalized the plot.
I think she's chasing them into the past is probably.
Hey, terrorists, come with me.
Come on, guys, get on here. Wait, you're terrorists?
A lot of neat little nuggets of stuff in there, too. It's a
yeah, and I've seen advertisements for it. I think it's the one of the girls that was actually in Alias and the first G.I. Joe movie, and that brings us full circle. So that's going to do it for episode 164 of the Atomic Geeks podcast. But fear not, we will be back next week, and My spider senses are tingling. It feels like Christian will be hosting next week. Christian, what's on deck?
Next week on the Atomic Geeks podcast, I am hosting and I'm trying out something new called Titles and Characters. Let's see what happens, and maybe we got another desert island. Fingers crossed. Jerks.
Oh, that's all we want is another goddamn desert island.
So what's the rule about the titles and the characters? I'm just kidding.
Let's find out next week. As you know, the Atomic Geeks are part of the Atomic Geeks podcasting network, and there are two other shows in that, including the classic Film Jerks. They have a new episode that's out right now, and it's about reviewing the film Easy Rider. Find it on iTunes. And also Nerd Lunch. What the hell are they talking about?
On the next Nerd Lunch, we are joined by one of your very own, Mr. Andrew Bloom. He comes aboard the Nerd Lunch podcast and subjects us to one of your favorite topics, a Would You Rather. Check us out on nerdlunch.net and on iTunes.
My God, my ears will never be the same again. So, lots of ways you can find the Atomic Geeks if you are interested on the web. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter at theatomicgeeks.com, at theatomicgeeks. Or you can search Atomic Geek Downs. You can search Hunk Burger for Christian or Atomic Geek Bloom. And you can find us at www.theatomicgeeks.com, where our forums are. It is quite handy. And if you listen to our show via iTunes, please be a lamb and leave us an iTunes review. So, for Mike, for Andrew, and for Christian, this is Michael DiGiovanni saying, the Atomic Geeks, out.
You just listened to another episode of the Atomic Geeks. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and of course, theatomicgeeks.com, part of the Atomic Geeks Network. Title track by Don't Look Down.
Fuck's sake. Tell my printer to print my fucking notes. It's like going, your ink is all fucking empty. I go, yeah, but not my black ink, fuckhead. That's what I'm saying, print grayscale, for shit's sakes.
You have one of those new talking printers?
That's what it says to me, all right.
And it has exactly Christian's voice, too.